from the Mercy One Studio. Making it personal with Bishop William Joneson on Iowa Catholic Radio and iowacatholicradio.com.
Welcome to Making It Personal with Bishop Joneson. I'm Kelly Mesher-Collins with the Diocese of Des Moines. On today's show, we're visiting with Stephen White, fellow in the Catholic Studies Program at the Ethics and Public Policy Center and Executive Director of the Catholic Project at the Catholic University of America, both located in Washington, D.C. He's also author of the book Red, White, Blue, and Catholic. Before we get today's interview, let's find out what's on the Bishop's mind.
Good morning, Kelly. Good morning. Glorious November days. We got another little respite here, so winter holds off another week, which is always great. And the great Feast of All Saints and All Souls,
yes.
And then kind of some marvelous saints this month. So and today, First Friday, the Feast of we celebrate the Sacred Heart, St. Margaret Mary Alacoque, and St. Claude de la Colombière, her spiritual director. So very great spiritual director. So it was great finally to get out to be at St. John's Greenfield last Sunday for confirmation. Mm-hmm. Those young people, we had a marvelous conversation beforehand, and they talked about some things that maybe I'll be talking with Steve White, too. They're just kind of bringing up, things like sexual abuse by clergy and other things, sometimes make it harder for them to give witness. And then Father Paul Koch, who was substituting for their pastor, Father Philip Benpong, and invited me to go over to Messina. I just kind of surprised the folks there. They didn't even know the bishop was going to show up at St. Patrick's. So we had a beautiful little celebration there, and so it was great. And then on past Wednesday night, I was at Christ the King, continuing our listening sessions with families, and get together a half dozen or so families and just kind of talk about faith and how they live their faith, who is Jesus. So we have everyone from 8 years old up to high school, and then their parents. So a particular blessing for me was to finally meet Marco and Diana Balmaceda in person, from St. Anthony's Parish. Mm-hmm. And their four sons who've been serving for so long, impressive guys. I kind of can relate, the four guys in the family, and the three brothers myself.
Yes.
So used to that. And of course, they're, trying to establish, their contributions to society and their, residence here. And so some tension there. I told them I'd be happy to write a letter for them to the judge in Omaha as they continue to process the status there for Marco in particular. So we're praying for them and pray that, the community of faith, which has welcomed them, that might translate into their ongoing status here, too, in a beautiful way. So, again, the election is very much on our mind. Mm-hmm. We're waiting for the results there. I probably won't go into that a whole lot, to see what's going. We kind of look for that, and looks like there'll be a separation of powers, likely, and no matter what the result is. So we're grateful for the marvelous turnout and the people who were part of that. Vocation Awareness Week, we continue to lift up all vocations in our call to holiness. Pope Francis telling us that, the saints aren't always perfect in what they say. They don't always do the exact right thing, but the wholeness of a life that hangs together. And so I think God's patience with us kind of pressing us on. And so hopefully the spark and the catalyst for our young people to believe that God desires them and desires their happiness. And so their vocation is not going to curtail their freedom, but it's going to open them up to something that's going to be meaningful to put it all out there. Fortunately, Dowling Catholic High School Maroon, they won't be able to play Valley High School tonight. I don't know. I didn't have a wager on that game. It's not good to bet on high school games.
Probably.
Particularly because some of our people go to Valley too. Mm-hmm. But Valley canceling out with the COVID, so they're not playing that game. So I imagine Dowling is pretty disappointed, not as much as the Valley people are, because you want to gear up for that. But St. Albert Catholic playing Logan Magnolia tonight, so that's a great thing for them. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they have the outcome they want and can go even deeper in the state playoffs and all that they're doing. We're conscious, too, of the rise in COVID. Local hospitals, Mercy and others, are not even allowing clergy to come in, and this is very painful, we want to offer the grace of the sacraments up until that moment when people cross over the threshold and to be at peace. And so I think that's a very, pierces the heart of everybody who wants them to know and have the consolation that the church is with them. But we also believe at the same time that God's grace will find us where we are, and no one will be denied what is needed to answer yes to Jesus when he invites us to come into his embrace in heaven, as we pray for the poor souls this month. Mm-hmm. But, we pray that God's grace brings peace to the families, even as we see that spike increasing. So,
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, we'll welcome Stephen White of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. You're listening to Making It Personal with Bishop Johnson on Iowa Catholic Radio and Spirit Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, and I want to thank Caldwell Parish Funeral Home and Crematory for underwriting Christ is the Answer. Losing a loved one, as we know, is never easy, and it can leave you feeling lost and even hopeless at times. But Caldwell Parish helps ease that burden by sincerely caring both about your loss and about your faith. Caldwell Parish Funeral Home and Crematory is Des Moines' only Catholic-owned and operated funeral home. Their number is 515-276-0551 or online at caldwellparish.com.
Thank you, Blessed Mother International, for their support of Iowa Catholic Radio. Everyone lives their life 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. How we use that time directly affects if our life will leave a significant impact or not. Each year, Blessed Mother International leads Central Iowans on a 12-day, all-inclusive experience sharing the heart of Christ with children in South Africa. Teams are forming to do something significant in an African child's life. Learn more at blessedmotherinternational.org. That's blessedmotherinternational.org.
Welcome back. I'm Kelly Mesher-Collins with the Diocese of Des Moines. On today's show, we're visiting with Stephen White, fellow in the Catholic Studies Program at the Ethics and Public Policy Center and Executive Director of the Catholic Project at the Catholic University of America, both in Washington, D.C. He's also author of the book Red, White, and Blue, and Catholic. So,
So we're waiting to make our connection with Steve. He and I go back a ways.
He's
been involved as kind of coordinating with George Weigel and the Ethics and Public Policy Center, the Tertio Millennial Seminar in Krakow, Poland. So he's also now a lecturer and things, mm-hmm. and kind of has a high profile the Catholic Project, too. So we're looking to speak with him. Steve, a great guy, a great Midwesterner. He went to the University of Dallas. And then had some profound experiences, I think, when he was over in London, living in a parish there, and just kind of, I think, his faith just really kind of exploded in that way. Not that it wasn't there already, so,
mm-hmm.
so I think his vocation as a father, now living in Virginia and other ways, so it's marvelous that he's got the time, and he's kind of in the thick of it right there in Washington, D.C.
Right.
So good. Okay. I understand you're with us now, Steve.
I'm here.
All right. Thank you. We had a moment's tremor as we were trying to make that connection. Of course, the whole country is kind of on the edge right now, mm-hmm. waiting for the results of the election as well. But we'll get to that shortly. Just kind of thinking about, you know, how your path has led you, father and spouse, and now a Catholic project at Catholic University of America, in addition to your work as a fellow at Catholic Studies at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. Kind of bringing that Midwestern, flavor to all that you do. Can you talk about your Midwestern roots briefly?
Yeah, sure. I grew up in Milwaukee and Chicago. Originally Chicago, so I'm a Bears fan and a Cubs fan. but most of grade school and high school in the Milwaukee area. My family is all from there. My mom's family is from Minnesota, and so that I tell people here in D.C. that the cynicism that we often associate with sort of the Beltway doesn't come naturally to me. I'm a little bit nicer than than I need to be sometimes, but I think that serves me. I think that serves me well. It's easier to when times get tough, it's easier to get less bent out of shape if you're more laid back and Midwestern. So I'm very happy about that.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's kind of how I know you. Although you have a quick wit, you know, which can be surgical at times. But I think, you know, as you always come back, people know that it's done out of a good feeling, goodwill, and all that's there. But you are in close proximity to all that's kind of happening right now, the kind of epicenter of the political world for Americans. And you know, do you have to kind of actively try not to have this kind of inside the Beltway mentality?
Yeah, you know, it helps having family back home. I've got family still in the Midwest, but also, you know, I've got a bunch of sisters in Texas. Four of my five sisters live in Texas now. So having family and being in contact with people who are outside the bubble is good. It's important. One of the things that I realized when I moved here, 15 years ago, whenever I moved here, is that people here, people who are, you know, well-educated, intelligent people who have important jobs, are basically just as competent and incompetent as everybody else in the rest of the country. In D.C., there tends to be more focus on what the latest news is, and everything that happens in this city is the most important thing that's ever happened ever, and we all have to know about it. But it's important for me to stay in touch with folks who aren't sort of immersing themselves in the news of politics and world news all the time, because that's distorting too. It's one thing to be well informed; that's important. It's also a good way to lose touch with sort of real everyday life. Chasing the news cycle is its own kind of sort of, I don't want to say disinformation, but it's its own kind of delusion, right? If you're just immersed in cable news all the time, or if you're immersed in what the latest news is, that's as much of a problem, or can be as much of a problem as living in what people out here call flyover country and not paying that close attention to what's going on here. So it's good to stay grounded. My family helps me do that, and sometimes it's nice just to talk to people who come from a part of a country where people still make things and build things and sell things, and instead of just sort of sit in offices and think about ideas and complaining to each other all the time.
Even though that's kind of your vocation now. And anyway, your sisters, that's been their vocation all along, right? To keep you in touch with reality, right?
Yeah.
And puncture the bubble in that way. But yeah, I mean, having lived, for 5 years as part of my graduate studies, I can remember staying up till 5 a.m. at Bush Gore and all of that. And so I went to bed at 11 o'clock this past Tuesday night. It wasn't looking like we were going to know anymore. But let's get to the Ethics and Public Policy Center, but then the Catholic Project, of which you're executive director, and it's kind of a new yoke that you've taken on in recent years. Can you tell us about that, please?
Yeah, so I've been writing on the church and sort of the intersection of church and culture and church and politics for a long time now. When the sexual abuse crisis, the latest iteration of the abuse crisis, broke in the summer of 2018, I started writing about that a lot. And through my writing on that and through some of the people I've met, I got invited to join the Catholic Project at the Catholic University of America, which was an initiative started by President John Garvey there to try and marshal the university's resources to respond to the crisis, right? This is Washington, D.C. This was the see of then Cardinal McCarrick. He, by virtue of being Archbishop of Washington, had been the chancellor at the Catholic University of America at one time. And so this city and that university in particular were really immersed in the crisis of 2018. And it became apparent to President Garvey, and he deserves a lot of credit for this, to see that the university had both sort of a responsibility but also an opportunity to respond in a way that helps the church. I think it's not news that the credibility of the bishops in 2018 took a big hit. And so the people who would normally be the leaders in getting the church out of the ditch that we're in, were hamstrung in a way. And there's a lot of work that can be done by the university to help the church recover in a way that is not antagonistic towards the bishops, is not antagonistic towards the clergy, but works as, in a way, for collaboration. This is our church. We need the bishops. They need our help. And there's a lot that a university can do to help do that. So we have educational programs. We run a certificate in child protection and safe environments that we're taking online to help educate people and train people up so they can help ensure that kids are safe in lots of different environments. We have research programs going on. We have a podcast that we've been doing to try and sort of educate people about the crisis. It's sort of a documentary style crisis, or a documentary style podcast called Crisis: Clergy Abuse in the Catholic Church. And it's been a huge success so far. We've got we're just closing in on 100,000 downloads, which for a little podcast made by some folks who never made a podcast before is quite good. And I encourage your listeners to check it out if they're interested. Not always light listening, but I think it's good and important for people to try and understand what's been happening in the church, how we got to this point, and maybe some clear sense of how we move forward.
Oh, that's such an important contribution, and not afraid to name things and to confront them directly and to go there in that way. I think that's the only way, rather than to go around it, but to continue to pass through and over one day, hopefully to a place of greater healing and trust, and restore that to the bishops. And obviously, I've got a dog in that hunt. I mean, my voice and credibility as one of the shepherds of the church, that what you're doing is is going to, you know, be in collaboration and help to animate some of that as well. It's not really a conservative liberal dynamic in this, isn't it? I mean, we're seeing, you know, participation across the spectrum. Is that right?
Yeah, in fact, one of the things that I thought about before taking the job there is, look, I work at a conservative think tank and work in politics to a certain degree, and so I have my own biases or insights, however you want to put it. But it became obvious pretty quickly in 2018, in the months that followed, that like so many things in our world and in our church, the abuse crisis became a massive sort of tug of war, an ideological tug of war in a lot of ways. And that bothered me because I thought that's a really good way to make sure that this crisis doesn't get resolved in a way that's helpful for the church. That's not helpful for the souls. And so we've worked very hard to try and make sure that we're telling parts of this story of the abuse crisis, that we're looking for the truth, that we're looking at hard things. We're talking about things that aren't always easy to talk about, and don't always reflect well on our friends or on the people who think like us. But that has to be done. There's been too much willingness to believe bad things about people who are different than us, and not enough willingness to take a hard look at ourselves and at sort of our team. And that whole dynamic of polarization has made the church's ability to respond to this crisis much more difficult. And so we've really tried to look at this as even-handedly as we can, because if we're not going to look at it even-handedly, what's the point, right? If we're just going to use this crisis to drive some agenda, then we're not helping the church, and we're not helping the church's mission.
Well, thank you. And, you know, not wanting to be overly critical, it sounds like a movement that kind of transcends this in a way. It can really promote some kind of gains of not only reconciliation, but deeper understanding and, you know, and communion and solidarity in the church, rather than the, you know, what can be kind of sarcastically referred to, you know, dialoguing someone into submission, that I'm going to keep talking and talking and talking until you finally relent and just accede to the position that I'm trying to advance. I was at the installation of Archbishop Rozanski in St. Louis in August, and, you know, after that ordination, there were people protesting and things out in the front steps of the new cathedral there, including about the McCarrick affair. And I went over to one of the protesters, not trying to be provocative, but just to say, you know, they're waiting for the McCarrick report. I said, we are too. We all are. You know, you know, we've been promised this, and we were promised that it would come out in the summer. And I don't know what the delay is, but, you know, we're still looking for that. And I think that'll be one moment of healing to actually, you know, it's kind of like a truth commission, hopefully, that will kind of lay out how his rise in the hierarchy of the church was possible. So anyway, may you continue to bear fruit on that front. Your book, Red, White, and Blue Catholic, I think that came out before the 2016 election. Am I correct in that?
It did. That came out in 2016. It was written mostly in 2015. So I think the Trump phenomenon was just on the horizon when I was writing it. So it predates that a bit, but I think that it holds up. If I had to write a book about Trump and the Trump phenomenon, that would have been a very different book, and it might have been a book that was more quickly dated. But yeah, just to talk about it very briefly, the idea was originally pitched to me as you know, do I want to write a short book that is essentially a voter guide for informed Catholics? And I thought about that, and I thought, I'm not particularly interested in writing that book. But
don't write a book that you're not even interested in yourself.
There are a lot of voter guides, and I've helped draft some voter guides, and the bishops have a voter guide. There are plenty out there.
There's no shortage of voter guides. Just go to any Catholic parking lot after Mass.
right. But what I was interested in doing, this was the book that I ended up writing, was sort of a guide to Catholic citizenship for the 364 days of the year that aren't election day, right? We put so much emphasis on voting, and I don't want to downplay the importance of voting. Obviously, it's an important part of exercising our citizenship in a democracy. But most of the work of citizenship that we do, or that we should be doing, happens long before we ever set foot in a polling booth. it happens in our neighborhoods. It happens in our families. It happens in, you know, the care we take for the education of our children. It happens in the way we run our businesses, the way we treat our employees. It happens in a million different ways. And that has at least as big of an impact on our politics, broadly defined, as voting. You know, I can cast a vote. That's one of however many millions of votes in the state I live in, and however many tens of millions of votes that are cast throughout the country. But the way we live our citizenship on a day-to-day level is something that gets much less attention. And I think it matters at least as much. And I think part of the problem in our politics right now is that we rely on voting to fix everything. If this one election is the most important election ever, and again, not to downplay the importance of elections, but if we think elections are going to fix what's broken in our politics, I think we're really missing the point here. So I wanted to write a book that sort of turns some of the emphasis back on sort of the day-to-day work of citizenship, and so that was my goal. I hope I pulled it off.
Yeah,
it's a short book, so people can read it themselves.
Doesn't it take longer to write a short book than a long book too?
That's what I told my wife and my editor. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, and it's St. Anthony Messenger Press, I believe, and it is a really marvelous, succinct overview of Catholic social teaching and how it impacts our role as citizens. And I would still commend it to people because I think it holds up.
It's Liguri Publications.
Liguri, I'm sorry. So I don't want to get you in trouble with your publisher. So thank you for correcting me. We'll see what the demographic analysis is. But, you know, it's one thing to say Catholics don't fall as Catholics in either red or blue categories. It's another thing to say we just become indistinguishable from the general population in our voting trends. There is something hopefully distinctive in the value set that we hold up and how that informs what we're about. Now, I did note, as a young bishop now, that, you know, there was no shortage of correspondence and things, people passionate about the perceived alignment of U.S. bishops with one political party or another. And before I get too much into this question, Steve, we're coming up on a break here, so I'm going to just take a brief pause. But again, we'll talk about this, and then maybe your phenomenon, what you tell about the bottom-up clericalism after the break.
Okay, yeah, sure.
We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Making It Personal with Bishop Johnson on Iowa Catholic Radio and the Spirit Catholic Radio Network.
Thank you, Blessed Mother International, for their support of Iowa Catholic Radio. Everyone lives their life 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. How we use that time directly affects if our life will leave a significant impact or not. Each year, Blessed Mother International leads Central Iowans on a 12-day, all-inclusive experience sharing the heart of Christ with children in South Africa. Teams are forming to do something significant in an African child's life. Learn more at blessedmotherinternational.org. That's blessedmotherinternational.org.
Is it time for a new roof? Then it could be time for you to get to know Bell Construction. Bell Construction is a roofing company entering its 30th year of business. They specialize in residential re-roofs, light commercial jobs, and have the experience to meet all of your roofing needs with personal service. With Bell Construction, the owner will come to your home or place of business in person to inspect and ensure the quality of work that you deserve. They pride themselves in working with you on a personal basis and making sure you are satisfied. Bell Construction, 515-963-4494.
Welcome back. I'm Kelly Mesher Collins at the Diocese of Des Moines. You're listening to Making It Personal with Bishop Johnson, and we are back with Stephen White.
Thank you for remaining with us, Stephen. We could go on for hours, but we'll try to be quick about what we do here. Again, the perceived alignment in some quarters by U.S. bishops with one political party or another, and whether their statements or silence appropriately emphasize the aspects of church teaching, the preeminence of life as a right. But this phenomenon that you commented on about bottom-up clericalism, could you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, so I there's a couple of phrases I like to lean on. One is bottom-up clericalism. One is that everyone, you know, half of Catholics in this country are looking for a silver bullet on how to vote. They want the bishops to tell us how we should vote. And there's a kind of clericalism I call bottom-up clericalism, which is this. It's insistence that the bishops need to tell us exactly what to do, particularly when it comes to politics. And there's something easy about being a layman who's able to sort of pass all of the buck to the bishops. So if the bishops would just say, do this, or the bishops would just say, don't do that, then all our problems would be solved. Well, expecting our bishops or our priests to do all of that hard work of forming citizens and shaping the secular sphere, A, gets the ecclesiology wrong. That's the job of the laity. And B, it easy for lay people to sort of wash their hands of doing the hard work of citizenship, right? If we can blame the bishops for the way Catholics vote or don't vote, then that takes the responsibility off of us. And if we're easy to we can criticize the bishops and we can sort of lay all the blame at their feet, because we put all the expectations on them. And I think that's a kind of a clericalism, because it's an abdication of the lay responsibility. We put that on the bishops, and then when it doesn't go our way, we slam the bishops. And look, I think it's really important for bishops to give a clear moral witness. And there are times when bishops don't speak up, and that implies approval of this behavior or that behavior. So I'm not saying bishops mm-hmm. get off the hook here. Mm-hmm. But I think the lay people need to understand that if you're waiting for the bishops to say, do this or don't do that, and then you expect that that's going to change how Catholics behave, I mean, look around you, right? Most Catholics can't be bothered to go to Mass on Sunday, right? Are the bishops not clear about that? Like, how many obligations as Catholics do we have that we just don't listen to the bishops do on, but we expect that politicians are going to listen to the bishops when the bishops speak? There's a sort of unreality there. And it's not a good situation, but I think expecting the bishops to solve our political problems, again, is passing the buck to someone who's got a certain kind of responsibility, but it's absolving ourselves, the laity, from the real work and the responsibility for the state of our politics and the state of our church.
Wow, that's a penetrating insight. And, you know, I mean, I like to think I preach pro-life 52 weeks Sundays a year, you know, and what I'm about. So holding up this message, and, you know, I think it'll resonate in different ways, but it does become more acute as we run up to an election. As my mother would say, though, each person, you have to think for yourself. So there is that hard work, and then obviously to follow through on choices, too. Probably about a minute and a half left here. Little bit of a little frisson of attention in the media, and, of course, concern among Catholics of goodwill. The Pope and the selective editing of the documentary that seemed to give sanctions to civil unions, and then there was commentary, and we had a clarification that came from the Vatican offices and kind of defending the traditional sacramental marriage between a man and a woman, but that there might be civilly recognized arrangements with certain benefits and protections. Your thoughts about that, and that the Holy Father kind of stirring the pot in that regard?
Well, I think there this is a thorny issue, especially to address in the last seconds of the show, but I think I would emphasize two points. One is that the Church teaches, and the Holy Father has not just agreed with this, but restated this many times himself, that marriage is between a man and a woman, period. That's all it is. That said, the second thing I would say is that it's not to downplay the importance of listening to what the Pope says, even in interviews or heavily edited documentaries. But there is a frenzied approach to parsing every word that comes out of the pontiff's mouth, or that it's reported to come from his mouth, that suggests to me, it often suggests to me an insecurity among the Christian faithful. And I think that we need to just relax sometimes, take a deep breath, go spend some time before the Blessed Sacrament, listen to the Holy Father, listen to your bishops, listen prayerfully, but
amen. And we'll conclude on that note. So, Steve, and thank you, and God's blessing in your family. Hopefully we can bring you back and continue a conversation. Thank you again.
I'd love that. Thank you.
You listen to Making It Personal with Bishop Johnson on Iowa Catholic Radio and the Spirit Catholic Radio Network.
You can hear Making It Personal with Bishop William Johnson every week on Iowa Catholic Radio and iowacatholicradio.com.